Good morning, Chair. Or good morning. Good late afternoon, Chair Smith, Director Unsworth, members of the Commission. My name is Donnie Martorello. I'm the Wolf Policy Lead for Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I'd like to introduce our new, not brand new, but it's been here a little while, Conflict Section Manager Dan Brenson. I think most of you all know Dan and his previous role in the agency. He's been was in the enforcement program for a number of years, and came to us previously he was the captain in Region 6. And glad to have him and use his talents now in the conflict section of wildlife program. And we're going to do a handoff here on the presentation. Before I get into that, I wanted to just take a couple quick minutes here to go over the elements that would have been in the director's report for wolves. And since I was here today, I thought I would share those now. All of these have been shared with the public, but I'm going to quickly just highlight the ones that have occurred since your last commission meeting. So on October 27th, we had the second wolf in Washington that was killed under the Cotton Act Authority commission rule. It was in northern Ferry County, where an individual, a livestock producer, witnessed a wolf in the act of attacking his livestock on private lands and shot and killed the wolf and reported it to the agency. And following the investigation, that was deemed, of course, lawful. That's the second wolf killed under Cotton Act authority, and per our Wolf Conservation and Management Plan, that queues up an assessment. Back when the Wolf Conservation Management Plan was developed in 2011, it was unknown where those would occur and would they be by permit, or in this case, it was by under authority by the commission. And so that's one of the things that we'll be looking at is that completing that assessment. And then in that same area, within about 3 miles of that wolf that was killed in northern Ferry County, there was a depredation on November 3rd that was a confirmed wolf depredation on livestock, a different producer. And then that same producer that had the one on November 3rd, on November 8th, had another confirmed wolf depredation on livestock. This producer, both of those were on private lands. This producer checks on the cattle daily during multiple feedings, has used a range rider in the past, removed sick and injured livestock from the area through the course of the year, and is involved in the department's sensitive data sharing policy. So just wanted to cover that. And then wanted to quickly touch on, I think you're all aware, that the department recently received litigation related to allegations of not providing records and a public disclosure request. Just wanted to touch on that one. And the last one is completed what's called an ungulate assessment, recently put that online. One of the things in our game management plan was to complete an ungulate assessment of all the deer and elk herds in the state and moose, and to take a look at the data that we have available to see if there are any indications that predation is a limiting factor for any of those deer or elk or moose populations around the state. We actually completed that in December, made it available, to my understanding, to our Game Management Advisory Council and to folks that requested it. But one of the oversights that we did have is we didn't get it online immediately, so we got it online now. Now that that's out there and circulating to a wider audience, I just wanted to highlight one of the caveats of that is in that assessment, we use the existing data that we have, harvest data, survey data, research data from that's gone on during that period of time, but for other reasons. And so it's not the best data sources to look at that very complex interaction between predator and prey. In that assessment, we didn't find any indications that predation were limiting ungulate populations that are below objective. But again, I want to emphasize that that's just using those data sources. And we're also involved now in a predator-prey project that you're aware of that is an investigation of more certainty and a better look into a very complex predator-prey situation. So I just wanted to touch on that. With that, we'll turn now to agenda item 10. This is WAC associated with the compensation for livestock damage by wolves. WAC 220-440-170, payment for livestock damage and other domestic animals. And 220-440-180, application of cash compensation for livestock damage or of or domestic animals. So real quickly, the three things that we're going to touch on is what these recommendations that we have for you today, this is just the briefing, is to align a part of the WAC with statute. And I'll describe that in a bit more so that the statute and the WAC are in a line in terms of livestock producers looking for outside sources for compensation. So that's one item. The other one is clarifying that producers, when they're setting the value for livestock damages, that an assessor is not always needed. We can also use a bill of sale from a previous year for similar type herd mates or animals, or a bill of sale from the next sale of a livestock producer for similar animals. So we'll touch on that. And then the last one is we haven't had in WAC the payment schedule in the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan that talks about either a 2-to-1 or 1-to-1, depending on the size of the acreage, et cetera, whether it's confirmed or probable. We want to get that payment schedule actually in WAC. So the first one, this is some of the verbiage from RCW 7736210. I'm going to take you right down to Section 1B, where in statute it talks about an owner of livestock may receive compensation down to B as they've exhausted all available compensation options available from nonprofit organizations. So if you turn to page of WAC 224.40.170, page 4, at the bottom of the page, in WAC it is said that they have to first seek coverage from payments from other entities. So I want to really dial down now to what this really means. So by saying other entities, that includes the Farm Service Agency, FSA. FSA pays for livestock, can pay for livestock damages. It's the indemnity clause program. But it is for livestock damages that are above a national average. And so when I talked to a representative from FSA, the average for Washington is a 5% loss rate, for example, for calves. And so it's meant for more of catastrophic kinds of losses, fire, drought, excessive predation, those kinds of things. So what we found is that a lot of the producers aren't eligible for compensation for FSA, but it requires quite a bit of time to wait to get that response. And so it delays the amount of time that a producer has to wait for payment for compensation for livestock. And so it's a loop that isn't necessarily where they're not getting that payment, because it's we pay for losses per our plan and our WAC. It's not in excess of a national average, so to speak. So that is the caveat that's happening in this language by changing it from other entities and aligning it with the statute to be specific to nonprofit organizations.
Yeah, Donnie?
Yes.
I think this is great. It helps clear that up, and it needed to be cleared up. But I'm a little curious. I don't know of any nonprofit organization in the state that is funding compensation. Defenders of Wildlife was the only one that used to, but I don't think they are anymore. So is it that simple? They can say there's no one funding this in our state? Or how would the landowner know who has a program out there?
That's a good point. And that's one of the elements that we do on the application, if there are others, or when somebody actually submits a claim for compensation, if we're aware of another source, we would share that with them. And you're absolutely correct, Commissioner. That historically, I think where this language came from in RCW was Defenders of Wildlife has paid some compensation. But there have been some rare and unique situations where we have communicated with nonprofit organizations here in Washington for things like compensation for a loss of a dog, a herding dog, or something like that. And so there still may be some situations that apply to this, but having it aligned with statute. Okay. I'm going to turn it over to Dan now for the next. Yep. Yes.
Okay. On two, utilize available self-help preventive measures available to prevent damages. In it's in the A there. I had a neighbor lose a calf. You know, there again, we're in a situation in my part of the world. Do we have wolves? But is it to the point that you can justify going out and putting flattery around yet? So, I mean, did my neighbor, did he get compensated for the calf? Or what? Where do we are on thresholds where we need to start doing flattery and that kind of stuff and range riding and blah, blah, blah? Or you understand where I'm coming from.
Yes. It. Thank you, Commissioner. It's a good question. And this will come up in the next presentation also as a part of this, and I'll make sure to touch on that. But specific to your question, in the WAC now, that this is the direction in RCW, in the WAC, it's similar in that a requirement that the producer is using non-lethal deterrence measures or is signed up on a damage prevention cooperative agreement or has a checklist with the department or can actually get a waiver from the director. This is where the effort and need from our perspective to make sure that the public and producers know where there are wolves so that they are aware that there could be a case of interaction and working with them proactively to put non-lethal tools on the landscape. But there can be situations where both the department and the producer are not aware there are wolves in the area, and it's a predation that is the first signal that there are wolves there. And so there is the capacity through a director waiver to still be able to pay compensation in those kinds of cases.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Slide it over to Dan for the next couple items.
Yes, good afternoon, Chairman Smith, Director Unsworth, and members of the commission. We'll move to the kind of the second item that we're looking to make a rule change proposal, and that is a relatively simple one in clarifying that a livestock producer can use an independent assessor or market sales receipts from their last sale or their next upcoming sale to estimate the value of their damaged livestock. So what we the intent here is clarifying language that would make it simply state basically the options, either the value at the time, the value based on last year's receipt, or if the producer wants to wait and see what the value is at the next market. To be able to use that as the comparable for estimating the value. Do I go through the actual from the notebook? Or you have the WAC language changes in front of you.
That's okay. I think you can, as long as you highlight it there.
So are there any questions on that particular issue? No. Okay, great. Okay, so yes.
In other compensation situations for other species, as I recall when we were working through conflict rules, it was a department identified assessor. They drew from a list. So is that not true with wolves? Or is this in lieu of that? Or if they're questioning the department's assessment, I need clarification.
Commissioner Thorburn, good question. What actually stimulated this, this goes back over a year ago, is as we were working on claims and working with members of our Wolf Advisor Group and producers that had livestock damages, it became apparent that an independent assessor is not needed in every case because the value of the livestock can be gleaned from the sales receipts. And so we wanted to clarify that, and that's what we've done here is we were learning through that process, we sat down with a small group of folks from the Wolf Advisory Group, producers and environmentalists and department staff. And we started to sketch out some of the early changes that you're seeing now. And so what Dan is describing is the clarity. It's not a change in practice, but it's the clarity to producers that they can use their sales receipts from last year for similar livestock herd mates and similar species, etc. They can wait until their next sale and use the sales receipts because, of course, they watch the markets. But if they don't have either one of those or they want to use an independent assessor, we can do that route as well. So we're just providing that clarity that those are kind of the three boxes, if you will, for determining the value of the lost livestock.
Yes, sir.
Truly, the way that they have this is the fair way to do it because just there again, my neighbor lost a three-day-old calf. I mean, the value of a three-day-old calf, you take it to the sale that day, which nobody, you know, does. You know, the baby calves get sold from time to time. But for the producer, that isn't a fair deal because there again, just exactly what Donnie said, you take the herd mates, whatever, steers, heifers, and take them to the sale the following year or from the year back. That's truly the only fair way to do it.
If I may, Chair. Commissioner Thorburn, I want to make sure I answered your question. There is a...
yeah.
If I misinterpreted it...
No, you did. You answered my question.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Just for my clarification, is there just... there used to be a fund for bear and cougar damage compensation, and it looks like it now it's all combined, or is that correct, in that there's just a wolf, bear, or cougar compensation fund?
They are separated. We have general fund state that provides $50,000 a year specifically for wolf damages, which then unspent money rolls into a another account. And then there's $25,000, I believe these are per year or per biennium, $25,000 specifically for cougar. And I could go back and find out exactly if that's per year or per biennium. I can't recall. But they are separate.
But this is the WAC that covers it. The funding source is separate.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And then the next one.
So the third and last area where we are proposing rule change is in the area where the difference between compensation for livestock loss on large grazing lots compared to small. So grazing sites of 100 or more acres where the agency determines it would be difficult to survey the entire acreage, a confirmed wolf depredation would pay the full current value for two animals. And that's based on the assumption that that where we're able to find and confirm one animal, it is likely on those large areas of allotments that, we recognize or we accept that it is likely that another animal may have been lost but not found and investigated. So for a confirmed livestock on a grazing site of more than 100 acres or more, we would pay the full market value for two animals, unless, of course, the other animals were accounted for at the end of the grazing season. For probable wolf kill in a smaller grazing area, that less than 100 acres, we're paying half the current value for two animals, which is a wordy way of getting around the math that we're paying half the amount that we would for a confirmed. And we wanted to get that table into WAC so it was clear. And then this also aligns the payment with the intent of the wolf plan itself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Entering some dangerous new guy ground asking a wolf question here, but whose budget pays the compensation?
Well,
what budget? I shouldn't say whose. What budget does this come out of? It
Right. Our budgets are allotted to two particular issues. And Donnie, if you want to address
yeah.
how we split that out in terms of what parts of our wolf management spending goes to, you know, recovery, to non-lethal deterrent or compensation. Donnie can walk you through some of that.
Yes, Commissioner.
And maybe it could be just a little bit clearer for someone who might think this comes out of hunting license money or comes out of general fund money or comes out of a federal grant. That's kind of the source budget.
Good question, Commissioner. The fund sources for compensation, there are two primary ones that we use. One is the state appropriated general fund state dollars that we receive each biennium, and then unspent money rolls into an unappropriated account that could be used for compensation or mitigation of damage. And the other is a federal source called the tester funds, which we have been receiving in the past 4 or 5 years, and our understanding is that fund source is starting to dry up a bit. But those are the two fund sources we use for compensation. We do not use hunter dollars or other fund sources.
Don, in one of the pie charts they were showing today, and it was one of those that was divided up into a whole litany, it was there because I was watching for it.
And then lastly on this item, I just want to again make it clear that we have been using this payment schedule from the Wolf Conservation Management Plan, and we're just making sure now we're just placing that payment schedule in rather than a table format. What you see on page 11 of WAC 180 is in text format, so that it's the payment schedule is now in WAC and codified. So before we finish up here, I just wanted to touch on some public comments we received you've seen in your notebook. We also received some stuff in the last couple days that I wanted to touch on. Some comment associated with applying compensation to only those that solely live off of livestock. And you'll see through the WACs that we have added, this is not new, but just for clarity again, that compensation is for commercial producers. A comment about grazing off of, for folks that are grazing off of their own land or water, their responsibility to protect their livestock. Again, just a comment. Compensation for livestock that are of a defendable size on the range. And then we also received from a different entity, this was from six organizations, Farm Bureau, Washington Farm Bureau, Cattle Producers of Washington, Washington State Sheep Producers, Washington Cattlemen's Association, Washingtonians for Wildlife and Conservation, and Hunter Heritage Council, a white paper called Words Matter. And I'll touch on that. I'm actually ahead of myself. I'll touch on that when we get to the next item. And then finally, where I was trying to go with that is we received some comment from Washington Cattlemen's Association regarding these two WACs. And I do want to call to your attention that we'll be doing a recommended adjustment between now and when you make a decision on that. So if you turn to page on WAC 224-40-180, page 10, this is existing language that we haven't recommended a change. We just moved it from one area to another, but we are going to have a recommended adjustment here. And there's a part there on the 9B, the last sentence on the page that's not struck out, where it talks about setting the values for different types of livestock. And it says bulls will be replaced based on the actual purchase price prorated on a 4-year depreciation cycle minus salvage value. The recommendation that we had from a stakeholder was to add minus salvage value if applicable. Because in the cases where a bull is dead and been fed on, there is no salvage value. And so if it wasn't clear to Washington Cattle Association, it's probably not clear to the public. And so we just want to make that a recommended adjustment when we see you next. And with that, we'll take any questions.
There's no public input.
Okay, thank you.